Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirits Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Welcome to the unofficial start of the weekend here in the Crescent City. Yes, friends, here at the NOLA Drink Show, we know all the words to the national anthem, especially before a college championship football game. Friends, got a really good show coming up for you here today, an important show coming up, actually. Our featured interview is with my friend Neil Bodenheimer, who is the co-proprietor of Curco. Curco operates the craft cocktail bar, sort of the original new wave, if you will, second generation during the cocktail renaissance post-2000 cocktail bar here in New Orleans. Started about 9 years ago in our case here. Cure, which is located on Ferret Street, uptown, corner of Ferret and Upper Line. And they also operate the Proto Tiki Bar. We're going to call it that. Cane and Table on Decatur in the French Quarter. But that's not what we're really talking about here today. We do touch on those two establishments. Neil is working with the Solomon family, a noted business and philanthropic family here in New Orleans, to acquire Tales of the Cocktail, which is, of course, as many of you probably know, the largest craft cocktail and spirits industry conference in the world. Just celebrated its 15th anniversary last year. Lots of controversy with Tales of the Cocktail. The current or outgoing, seemingly, proprietors, Paul and Ann Tunderman, stepped in a lot of controversy. We'll talk a little bit more about that stuff in the second segment. But Neil is working with the Solomon family, as I said, to take over Tales of the Cocktail and, importantly, keep it here in New Orleans, probably with a fresh set of eyes. So we'll talk a little bit about that. I'm going to tee you a little bit more about that interview up here in the second segment. Then we'll get into that featured interview. Friends, it's carnival season. Here we are, right in the middle of carnival season. We started on January 6th, this past Saturday. As we do, we go from the 12th day of Christmas, or the Epiphany, or Joan of Arc's birthday, if you're of those different belief systems, however it works for you. And I know the carnival starts then, on January 6th, and we go forward until this year, when Mardi Gras falls on February 13th. And I do get asked this a lot by friends from out of town and things like that. How does it work? You know, Mardi Gras obviously fluctuates different Tuesdays. There's a range of dates there. And just so you know, if you're not familiar, how it works is that it's based on Easter, and Easter was set originally to coincide with the first Sunday after the full moon that follows the spring equinox. So you got that. There's the criteria for Easter. And then we dial back 47 days from Easter. Easter can fall on any Sunday between March 23rd and April 25th. We roll back whenever that is from, you know, as I said, 47 days. And that Tuesday in there, that Tuesday that will be, can happen anywhere between February 3rd and March 9th. So that's how we get our date for Mardi Gras this year, as I said, February 13th. And what that means, it's, so you can tell by the date range I just gave, it's a little bit on the early side this year. Not super early, but a little bit. And really, a lot of the, what that means is that, you know, we do what we do going from holiday season into carnival season. We kind of have all the things that we do line up. It just means they all kind of happen in a little bit of a shorter window, a little bit faster, a little bit quicker. Things are a little more, you know, just kind of sandwiched together, which just means it's more dense with fun. Okay, that's all that really means. But we'll certainly here on the show be talking quite a bit about carnival and Mardi Gras and all kinds of stuff as we move forward until February 13th. Did want to mention one little bit of interesting news as it relates to carnival here in New Orleans. We have our first official new Mardi Gras crew in 5 years. This was being reported in Offbeat magazine. It's an interesting concept, and this is why I really wanted to mention this. Ben and Jeanette Jaffe, who are with the Preservation Hall Foundation, of course, you know, connected to the Preservation Hall and the Preservation Hall Jazz Band, and they have partnered up with Vin Butler and Regine Chasson, which is, I believe, how you say her name, who are members of the popular band Arcade Fire. And maybe you know this, Arcade Fire has developed a significant affinity for New Orleans. They can be seen often hanging out around town, certain members popping up on stage, playing music, stuff like that. They've done some stuff with the Prez Hall band, that sort of thing. And interestingly, Regine Chasson there in Arcade Fire, she is the daughter of Haitian immigrants. And she was actually born and raised in French-speaking Canada in Montreal, and I think has a lot of a connection to New Orleans, as she says in her life, due to some of the, you know, the cultural connections going on that way. And so she basically has been doing a lot of charitable work in Haiti. And Canaval, the word crew de Canaval, Canaval is the Haitian word. It's spelled K-A-N-A-V-A-L for carnival in Haiti. And with all the fundraising work that she's been doing, that was really kind of where this crew is going. And this is why I wanted to highlight this, is that it is meant to be a fundraiser. It's also meant to celebrate the cultural connections of Haiti and New Orleans, of which, you know, lots of strong connections that way, as you can imagine, you probably know. But with all the natural disasters in Haiti, some of our own bumps in the road that we've experienced here in Southeast Louisiana and in New Orleans, the idea is to raise funds for various causes in both locations to assist people who are struggling with various aspects, especially the natural disaster stuff in Haiti. So I think it's a really neat concept using the crew, and many of the crews have a great philanthropic bent to them. We all know that. So here's another one taking on that tradition of philanthropy as it connects to the crew. This particular crew is going to roll on Tuesday, February 6th. They're going to leave the Preservation Hall there in the French Quarter, head out to Rampart Street, go to Congo Square in Armstrong Park, then head back to One Eye Jack's in the Quarter. It's going to be block parties. There's going to be a ball that evening at One Eye Jack's and all kinds of fun stuff. So I just wanted to highlight that because I think it's for a really good cause. And it sounds like it's going to be a lot of fun, a lot of great music going on, of course, as well, featuring Prez Hall, of course, and then members of Arcade Fire, apparently, and all kinds of others, DJs, some Haitian musicians, really neat. If you're interested in learning more, check out www.canaval.org, K-A-N-A-V-A-L.org. Another great event, friends, going on right now is the fourth annual Danny Barker Banjo and Guitar Festival that celebrates the life of the great jazz man, Danny Barker, banjoist and guitarist extraordinaire. If you are not familiar with Danny Barker, you should be familiar with Danny Barker, sometimes known as the raconteur of New Orleans. If he was only judged on the merits of his musical career and ability, he would be one of the luminaries in the jazz world, period. He moved to New York from here by about 1930 or so, spent the golden age of jazz in New York playing with such people. Listen to this list: Jelly Roll Morton, Louis Armstrong, Charlie Parker, Billie Holiday, Dizzy Gillespie, Sidney Bechet, many others. Some say that he was actually on more than 1,000 recordings. Yeah, that's right. 1,000 recordings potentially that he recorded on. And so, you know, that legacy of his music, and if you go listen to his music, his banjo work, his guitar work, and I'm not a professional musician, but it sounds so deceptively simple. The great ones make it sound easy. It is not. The syncopation with which he plays, the skill at which he plays to artistry, the great storytelling that goes with his lyrics, all the stuff, the music is wonderful. Please check out Danny Barker's music. But importantly, another part of Danny Barker that maybe is even more important than the music is how he was a mentor to so many New Orleans musicians when he came back to New Orleans by the late 60s, really a steward of New Orleans musicians and music, excuse me. And Danny Barker was a guy, a very smart man. He unfortunately passed away in 1994, who understood the historical context and the importance of New Orleans music and played a major role in, as I said, stewarding this culture that is so ingrained here for all of us in New Orleans. One of the things that he did, for example, when he came back is he realized the tradition of brass band music in New Orleans was threatened. Its very existence was threatened. So he started the Fairview Baptist Church Christian Band in 1970. Some of the folks that came through that: Leroy Jones, okay, Greg Stafford, Dr. Michael White, who is also, you know, great musician, but an academic and a preservationist of New Orleans jazz music, important in his own right, drummer Herlin Riley, many, many others. I don't want to say that Danny Barker single-handedly saved brass band music, but man, he played a huge part in preserving the tradition of brass band music. And as you probably know out there today it is thriving in no small part thanks to Danny Barker. That festival is going on. I really highly recommend that you get out there and check out some of the events. It actually started a couple days ago, but it goes on through Sunday. So if you're listening here on the radio on Thursday, you can still catch something this evening. Great performance at Snug Harbor tonight, of course, the famous club, 626 Frenchman Street. Shows are at 8 and 10. It's the Danny Barker Birthday Bash and All-Star Band. Look at some of these folks, Greg Stafford, whom I just mentioned, Freddie Lonzo, Bruce Brackman, Detroit Brooks, excuse me, Mari Watanabe, all kinds of others. That's only $15 to go to either one of those shows. Friday also is, there's some talks going on. There's going to be what's called Don't You Feel My Leg, String All-Stars. That's the band with Detroit Brooks, Carl LeBlanc, Steve Masakowski, and Sava Vinay, kind of a, maybe even a modern incarnate, if you will, to a degree. Maybe that's not fair. Sava Vinay, great banjoist, guitarist, preservationist in his own right. They're playing. That is at the Joyce Wines Vine Center, 1205 North Rampart Street, 9 to midnight tomorrow over at Kermit Ruffin's Mother-in-Law Lounge, which is at 1500 North Claiborne. There's going to be music going on, all kinds of great musicians playing then. There's all kinds of great stuff going on. So friends, I invite you to check it out. Stuff on Saturday, stuff on Sunday. Please go visit, where is that website? That website is DannyBarkerFestival.com. dinewinefestival.com if you're interested in finding out more. Again, DannyBarkerFestival.com for the complete schedule, all that stuff. Please get out there and check some of that stuff out. Please learn who Danny Barker is. We would not have the vibrant, wonderful New Orleans music that we still celebrate and enjoy today without that guy. Friends, we're going to play a little Danny Barker for you here going out as we take our break. We'll play a little bit of Danny Barker coming in after the break for you as well. We're going to be back to talk a little bit about our featured interview with Neil Bodenheimer of Cure when we come back and talk about a couple other quick things, and then we'll get into that feature interview with Neil, and then we'll be back after that to close things out here on the show. Friends, we're going to take a little break here. Come on back.
Off in a quiet dark corner, with his eyes bloodshot and red just like mine, sat this wise and slick old time ancient gambler. And these are the words that the old man said.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickie Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickie Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
Are you tired of drinking the same wines? Switch it up. Try the Kreutz Family Cellars wine. Kreutz Family Cellars is a small, family-owned winery in Sonoma County that makes wines from some of the most prized vineyards throughout Northern California. Each bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines has a magnolia on the label. The magnolia is a symbol of the family's southern roots and their way of life. True, honest, and fun. Look for the magnolia and pick up a bottle of Kreutz Family Cellars wines today.
Time for lunch? We've got you covered at Sobu.
Chef Juan Carlos whipped up special two-course lunches that start at $14.
Try our Creole Cuban sandwich and pair it with a bowl of our gumbo.
Of course, Sobu's full menu is also available.
And don't forget Sobu's version of Commander's Palace 25-cent martinis.
Available Monday through Friday, 11:30 a.m. to 3:30 p.m.
Join us at Sobu for our speedy lunch at 310 Charter Street in the Quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Sobu, life is meant to be lived, not endured.
If I only had a dollar, buy some ham and eggs. I haven't had a square meal for many, many days. I can hear my stomach growling.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, as always, friends, thanks for tuning in here to the show. I really appreciate it, as always. Happy Carnival to everybody out there. Whether you're here in New Orleans or you're somewhere else, it's still Carnival. So happy Carnival to you. Wanted to mention one really nice event went to on Saturday. We were noting how Saturday was the transition, if you will, from holiday season to Carnival season. 12th day of Christmas, the Epiphany, all that good stuff. And that was actually my birthday. I'm just going to throw that out there. So I had a great day. It's funny how that falls on the same day every year. Anyway, I'm going to let that go. Went to a really cool event that I got invited to. It was the first annual Tamale Festival. And one of the things that I think I mentioned last week leading up to this, we have a lot of festivals for a lot of food and a lot of things that happen here in New Orleans. But I thought this was just a really fun and neat festival. The connection to tamales, as we talked about before, many original tamale shops that were operated by Creole folks and black folks here in town. The tamale has a long, longer than that, history, and even really has connections back, of course, to Native American culture. And then we throw in all of the Latin American, Central American, Mexican culture that we have here in New Orleans, a huge part of our culture here as well. And so all these variations on the tamale, you know, there's a ton of these variations on the tamale out there. And that was celebrated at the festival. And it was just a really neat kind of mom and pop festival. About a half a dozen food vendors out there, great music. It was at the Poor Boys Bar. I believe it's a 1300 block of St. Bernard Avenue there in the Faubourg Marigny. Cool, cool festival. I hope they do it again next year. So just a shout out to them. Had a blast. That was how I sort of kicked off my birthday. And then we went from there, but a neat festival. So I hope they be on the lookout for that next year as well and get out there if you possibly can to check that out, friends. So I wanted to mention and kind of tee up the interview. I mentioned our featured interview is with Neil Bodenheimer of Cure. And as I said, Neil is working to take over, along with the Solomon family, Tales of the Cocktail. Tales of the Cocktail has been a very controversial event lately for various reasons. Now, let me give you a little bit of background here. Last Mardi Gras, so the current proprietors, seemingly, as I said, outgoing proprietors of Tales of the Cocktail, Paul and Ann Tunnerman, found themselves in a certain amount of controversy because they made basically blatant racist remarks during Mardi Gras of last year. You can go find this stuff online if you're interested. We've talked a lot about it on the show. I'm not excusing anything. We've just talked about a lot about it, and that's not what we're going to talk about here today necessarily. But there was that. There have always been some questions about maybe the event Tales of the Cocktail has gotten too big. Sometimes this happens, right? You start something that's very important, something that's very good, and it grows and just sort of outgrows you. And you've got to have the wherewithal and ability to maybe bring in other people, do other things to realize that it has become bigger than you. One of the questions, this is a matter of public record, is that the organizational structure, basically there was the nonprofit wing of Tales of the Cocktail, and then they ran a private for-profit business called Mojo 911. We'll talk about that a little bit with Neil, but a lot of the money, and they've been audited and all this kind of stuff, and we talk a little bit about that too. But Mojo 911 was basically the for-profit entity that had a huge amount, if not the most amount, to do with programming, putting on Tales of the Cocktail, helping put on these parties, all these installations, all this kind of stuff that go on at an event of this magnitude. So the structure, some people had some questions about it. Again, nothing illegal has ever been proven. That is certainly not my accusation, but the structure maybe is a little bit odd for a nonprofit in some of these things. And my view has always been the Tales of the Cocktail sort of became, or tried to become, too many things to too many people in an in-house sort of way. And what I actually mean about that is, look, a lot of things are going on in the service and hospitality industry of import, lack of diversity, sexual harassment, all kinds of things along those lines. All kinds of very important things that need to be addressed in the industry. Now, whether Tales of the Cocktail is the forum for that is somewhat debatable. But here's my problem with what's happened is that lots of times I think they tried to address certain issues without having the in-house expertise to do so, and maybe didn't outsource in ways to bring in experts to do what needed to be done to address these issues. That's just my opinion. One of the things I think had been a problem. And, you know, again, it's because the event and all the other stuff they do, not just the conference that happens here in New Orleans in July, but all the stuff they do year round, it's just become a huge thing. And I think they basically kind of outgrew their britches, if you will, and, basically couldn't handle some of the things that were coming down the pike. Now, one of the things that I want to say, and what we're doing here is providing a little context for the interview with Neil. We're not really out here to demonize Ann and Paul Tunnerman. I think they made a lot of mistakes. I really firmly agree. There was a tone deafness there as things that went on after these racist remarks came out, how it was handled. Paul left the organization, then some 8 months later came back in, which really caused a huge ripple. Again, this is all out there in a matter of public record. You can go research this stuff if you want. I think it was a huge mistake. I think it showed a tremendous lack of understanding and a tone deafness, as I said, in doing that and how they handled things. But what I want to be really clear about here is, again, this is my opinion, and I think a lot of people share my opinion on this, and trying to get these things right for Tales of the Cocktail, it just didn't work. We don't want to hold Neil and the Solomon family, to a certain degree at least, accountable for, I'll say, the sins of the father, if you will. So a lot of the purpose of this interview was not to demonize Ann and Paul Tunnerman. It was really not even necessarily to, other than provide context for a lot of what I just mentioned, how we move forward with Tales of the Cocktail. But, you know, beyond that was not to meant to delve too much into these issues. Now, you know how I stand on these issues. I think maybe a lot of you know how you stand on these issues. But, you know, I wanted to provide context out there, and I wanted to ask Neil some of these questions about, you know, look, this all matters to Tales of the Cocktail. And I wanted to ask Neil, what are their views? He's taking over something. Neil and the Solomon family are not ignorant to what happened with Tales of the Cocktail before. So I wanted to give Neil an opportunity to speak moving forward, you know, what's on their radar, how they intend to try and address a lot of these things. So that's really where we go from here. It's about looking forward with Tales of the Cocktail within a context of what has been happening with Tales of the Cocktail, if that makes sense. And again, not out here to demonize Ann and Paul Tunnerman. I'm also not out here to defend Ann and Paul Tunnerman. So let's be really clear about that as well. It's really sort of about moving forward. I also want to mention briefly that there were certain things. This is a very difficult conversation for Neil to have. It is still a pending transaction. So the financial part of this is not quite done. And Neil is also, you know, signed a non-disclosure agreement, as you might imagine. And so there are certain things that we could not talk about. especially some of the money involved and some of the structure things and certain things like that that we just couldn't get into. So I don't want anyone out there to think that we were ducking questions or I wasn't going to ask some difficult questions of Neil, because I do, and that Neil wasn't really dodging things. There were just certain things legally that he could not at this point talk about. We will certainly get Neil back on the show, maybe members of the Solomon family, to talk about moving forward with Tales of the Cocktail, its importance in New Orleans. It's a really important event that goes on in July when, you know, in the service industry and the hospitality industry, people and the industry is not making a lot of money. Now, I realize there's another issue out there that we talk about, the lack of diversity in the hospitality industry, especially front of house in the cocktail scene. Some of these things, a lot of this is drawn on racial lines. There's a lot of controversy about, well, yeah, this event's really good, puts a lot of money into the New Orleans economy, including those in the hospitality industry and work it, including the back of house, including the front of house, but the people in the back of house are not enjoying the fruits of the labor, if you will. I understand that is also a very controversial thing. It's an important issue that needs to be addressed. I think it's on the radar of Tales of the Cocktail, but I'm just going to say this, that last year, for example, it put $18 million into the local economy, most of it in the hospitality industry. So again, we're just going to move forward with this conversation with Neil, talking about the future of Tales of the Cocktail. Don't think for a second that here on the NOLA Drink Show that these issues are going to go away. We're going to continue to talk about these things. And Neil and the Solomon family and Tales of the Cocktail are an organization and a group of people that we're going to continue to ask those questions. So there you go, friends. We're going to take a little break here on the show, bottom of the hour, and we're going to come back with Neil Bodenheimer of Cure, talking about the future of Tales of the Cocktail. Friends, come on back.
The French Market is a place where history is made fresh daily. From the historic Upper Pentalba building on Jackson Square to the ever-evolving Farmers Market, our six-block district celebrates New Orleans food, music, and culture through events, festivals, walking tours, health and fitness classes, and also children's workshops at the New Orleans Jazz Park. Visit our calendar of events at www.frenchmarket.org. The French Market, making history fun since 1791.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website, drinklabnola.com.
With the season's beautiful weather, it's a perfect time to take a drive across Lake Pontchartrain and visit New Orleans' only local vineyard and winery, Pontchartrain Vineyards. Our tasting room is open Wednesday through Sunday from noon till 4, or by appointment. Come enjoy a flight of our wines in our classically styled French Provençal tasting room, or pack a picnic lunch and enjoy a bottle of wine on our patio overlooking the vineyard. While you're there, ask about our wine club. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with New Orleans' own Sazerac Company, makers of Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In case you haven't noticed, rye whiskey is hot, flying off store shelves and dominating the bar scene in New Orleans and around the country. Rye's spicy and assertive character is drawing in those looking for whiskey with a bite, but that equally pairs well with cocktails. Enjoy it in cocktails like the Old Fashioned or Manhattan, or simply savor it on the rocks. Sazerac Rye Whiskey, the way New Orleans does whiskey.
Hello, this is Ron Bartholomew, and to my great city of New Orleans, I'd like to introduce to you Touch Vodka. This artisan handcrafted ultra-premium vodka is uniquely distilled from Florida's finest wildflower honey and American grain. Touch also produces key lime, Valencia orange, and ruby red grapefruit selections that are infused with natural oils of locally sourced fruit, which results in a unique 80-proof vodka with no sugar added or coloring. Touch is now available at Doranax, Cello's, and the Corporation Grill and Bar, and many other locations across Louisiana. This holiday season, sit back and relax and enjoy Touch Vodka.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. If you're listening to this show, you love good food and good wine. And a great wine with our plentiful fresh Gulf seafood is the Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc, a crisp, balanced white blend from the south of France. Whether it's with fresh oysters, crab, redfish, or shrimp, This Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc will not disappoint, and it's a great value at around $14. Domaine St. Rose Coquille Blanc. Cheers!
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you, WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, friends, if you were listening at the top of the show, I hope you were. You know that we were here on Monday earlier in the week recording at Cure, which is on Ferret Street, corner of Ferret and Upper Line, a fine craft cocktail bar. And I'm pleased to be joined by the proprietor, Neil Bodenheimer. Welcome back to the show, Neil.
Hey, how's it going, Brian?
It's good, man. Absolutely, man. It's good to see you again. It was last time we did a little bit of the show with our good buddy Robert LeBlanc over there at Cavan.
Yeah, no doubt. I miss having Robert here.
Yeah,
I'm always in his shadow. He's so much taller than I am.
You know, whenever the guy gives me a hug, it's like it's intimidating, right? Because I come up to about his chest. You and I both are about of the same stature.
Exactly.
So, yeah, exactly. And I do appreciate though when he at least he kind of slumps down in the chair when he was sitting there with us. Didn't make us look quite so short.
Exactly.
Last time.
Yeah, he tries to meet us halfway.
What a nice guy he is. Well, cool, man. And you know, we're here at Cure, so I appreciate you hosting us here today. It's actually been a little while since. I've been here. We're admiring the bottle collection a little bit. I always like to see what you guys have on the shelves.
Well, glad to have you back in.
Thank you, man. And we'll circle back on Cure and Cane and Table and some stuff like that after, because we do have some big news to talk about. Here is what the heart of the issue is as we're talking, is that things are changing at Tales of the Cocktail, and this has a lot to do with you, Neil, coming into the scene with the Solomon family.
So, yeah, we're really excited because we really felt like the future of Tales of the Cocktail was in jeopardy. And there was an opportunity to step in with the Solomons and stabilize Tales, but also let it evolve a little bit. And it's going to be a 100% not-for-profit company.
That's great. Now, and let me just do this because I don't want to. And if you're interested, listeners out there, in knowing sort of what we're talking about some of the troubles the Tales of the Cocktail ran into, the purpose of this interview is not to go back and relive the history with Ann and Paul Tunnerman, who were the previous owners of Tales of the Cocktail, but they managed to, and some of this will probably weave its way in, but they managed to get themselves into some controversy during the past year, and that's what Neil is referring to and saying that Tales was threatened and its existence in New Orleans was threatened. Is that fair to say it that way?
It is, and I think that Ann and Paul, being really great New Orleans citizens, understood that a local buyer was the best possible outcome because they wanted to make sure that it could be here for many years to come, and we really appreciate that part.
Well, let's talk about that, Neil, because that's an important thing. And again, I think maybe listeners don't understand that you know, the event started 14 years ago, 15 years ago.
Where 15. It just eclipsed. It's 15th year.
Yeah. Okay. Right. So, and this is an event that takes place in July in the middle of summer, which is here in New Orleans. And I'm sure a lot of people are listening on the podcast from outside. That's our low season. So, the event does put money in people's pockets during a critical time.
Yeah, I mean, it is one of the lowest of the low. And it used to be. And really, the change there has been that it's given a midpoint in the summer where people can actually make money that work in the service industry. And it means a lot to bartenders and servers and bussers and back runners. And it's a big deal. Now it's only a week, but you know, the impact is that you could see it really almost up to 10 days, because you have suppliers that are in town before Tales and then after setting up and breaking down. It generates about, I think at last count, it was just over $18 million of economic impact in the middle of July.
And that cannot be overstated, the importance, economically speaking, of what that means.
It's irreplaceable.
Yeah. And so the idea then that potentially, and there was chatter about this in the industry, that if Tales maybe wasn't going to survive some potentially, or it was going to potentially be moved away from New Orleans, correct?
Yes. And I think a lot of the buyers were interested in keeping it in New Orleans, whether they were local buyers or not. But the question was how long?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the great thing about working with the Solomons is that we know that this is going to be in New Orleans for as long as the event is successful.
Mm-hmm. Right. Now, and I will probably get into this in a little bit too, because I think I know, and I've heard some of the conversations out there that we talk about some of the controversy that occurred with Tales of the Cocktail, and that the idea, there's sort of a catch-22 here, right, Neil, that the amount of money is great, and it's great, but then there were people that potentially were being victimized by this or perceived as being victimized by this. I'll use that. And so it's sort of a damned if you do, damned if you don't situation.
I mean, I think that's correct. I mean, it's really hard to make everybody happy.
Right.
And, you know, ultimately, by turning this into a 100% not-for-profit venture, it's that the good's going to outweigh the bad. Yeah, I think it's always, you're always going to see people that feel disenfranchised in any event.
Mm-hmm.
But our goal is to try and limit that as much as we can. And part of that's going to be by giving money back to issues that are important for New Orleans, and then issues that are important for the spirits and cocktail business
and,
as well.
And the broader industry. Uh-huh. Well, let me ask you this also, Neil, because I'd like to come back to that, talk a little bit about the structure, how you guys are kind of looking at doing some things. Mm-hmm. But you've touched on this already, but just from a personal level, a little bit more on your motivation for getting involved. It's a big deal. You're taking on a lot, man, and it's a lot of responsibility. It's, I'm sure, a lot of financial weight and things like that. So,
well, and let's be clear here. I'm not going to be the person running Tales of the Cocktail.
Okay, right.
I love my job, my current job. I wasn't looking for another job.
right.
But I also understood that what it meant for the city of New Orleans and what it meant for people that lived here and particularly worked here. And if you have an almost, you know, really since the film business has reduced their footprint here, the summers have become a lot slower over the past few years.
Right.
I think if you would have taken Tales of the Cocktail out of the equation, I think it would have been really devastating to service industry workers in the city. And I think that would have made it a lot harder for people that work in the service industry to live here
mm-hmm.
full time,
which is already a tough enough deal.
It is, and I just think that over time it would have had a negative impact on the entire city.
Mm-hmm. $18 million of economic impact in the month of at any month is or from any event is significant, but in the month of July, it's incredible. And I think for listeners, if you're not aware of this, you know, wherever you're listening to the show, that for the most part, the tourism industry is basically the engine or is the largest segment of the economy in the city of New Orleans. And the way New Orleans works is that it's not tourism through amusement parks and other things. It's the hospitality industry is the backbone of that tourism industry.
It's correct. And our general tourist industry runs, you know, the height of it is October through May.
Mm-hmm.
And it gets pretty slow in June and then we get an uptick in July where we have kind of our perfect consumer coming through town because you've got people that work in bars and restaurants
mm-hmm.
and they want to go to all the bars and restaurants while they're here.
Right. And they're good tippers.
And they're great tippers. and then if you throw in the fact that you know, that then we go into August and September, which really are the slowest months here. It really becomes, it would become a really significant deal to have four really slow months in a row.
So, right.
You know, so part of it was, you know, part of it was looking at the overall and saying, God, what's it going to do to the city? And then, you know, part of it was, you know, I love Tales of the Cocktail. I met my business partner, Kirk, at a spirited dinner, and I look forward to it every year. And really, the idea of that leaving the city or being diminished was just, I just didn't feel like it was something that I could sit and feel good about. You know,
right.
Sit on the sidelines and feel good about.
That makes a lot of sense. That makes a lot of sense, Neil. Well, let's do this. Let's take a little break here, and we'll come back, and we'll talk a little bit more about some of the look and feel. We'll talk a little bit about how Tales was structured before and what you guys are looking to do with it structure-wise, and then we'll probably talk a little bit more about some of the focus and some of the program stuff that I know this is very, very early in the process, so listeners don't expect a ton of specifics. I think what we're trying to capture here is a little bit more of what Neil and the Solomon family and everybody else involved has on their radar, and I think a lot of this stuff is really important for the future of the event. So, friends, we're going to take a little break here on the NOLA Drink Show. Come on back.
We're going to stay here to soothe our soul. If it takes all that long. Listen, might be 12 o'clock and it might be 3. Time doesn't mean that much to me. Ain't felt this way since I don't know when. Don't know when I'm gonna feel this way again. So come on, get in the groove and let the good times roll.
Oregon wines are taking over New Orleans. The reason? They're delicious. Next time you're shopping for wine, grab a bottle of Sass Wine. Located in the South Salem Hills of Oregon's Willamette Valley, Sass Wine produces small amounts of handcrafted, high-quality wines that include Pinot Noir, Pinot Blanc, Pinot Gris, Chardonnay, Riesling, Sauvignon Blanc, and Rosé of Syrah. A perfect balance of full fruit with fine, supple tannins and firm acidity is what makes truly great wines, and you'll find that in every bottle of Sass Wine you drink.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petit Sirah, excellent with steak. To our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Locally inspired and nationally recognized, Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse serves USDA prime beef, Gulf seafood, and innovative Creole dishes. Come experience why Maxim Magazine and Playboy named it among the nation's top steakhouses. Running short on time? The full menu is available in the bar for quicker and more casual dining. Dickey Brennan's 5 After 5 Happy Hour Special is back. Dickey Brennan Steakhouse is located in the French Quarter at 716 Iberville.
I wonder why my baby drinks so much wine. If she keeps a drinking, she's gonna lose her mind. She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? I hate to do it, but I just got to let her go. She drinks wine day and she drinks wine night. And when she come home, she wants to fuss and fight. She's a wine-head woman, don't you know? She's a wine-head woman, don't you know?
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in today, and pleased to be joined by my friend Neil Bodenheimer, as you know, who is the co-proprietor of Cure Co. that owns Cure here at Uptown, where we're sitting today on Ferret Street, as well as Cane and Table on Decatur Street in the French Quarter. We'll get there, friends. We're going to talk about that. We're getting the serious stuff out of the way here, and we're talking about Tales of the Cocktail and the future of Tales of the Cocktail, which is an important thing. I think, Neil, we've set the stage here talking a little bit about the economic impact and some of the interpretation, perhaps as a way to put it, of what the economic impact does and does not mean. We're not getting into a lesson of social issues to a large degree here, although we are touching on this and this is important. One of the things and one of the questions that people have asked before and maybe raised a few eyebrows or things that might have been a little controversial, Tales of the Cocktail, and this is all a matter of public record, friends, is that Tales of the Cocktail was structured with a nonprofit as a nonprofit, and then also there was a for-profit called Mojo 911 that was given a lot of the contract work to do Tales, to set Tales up, put the events on, all the private parties, which that's a big deal. I mean, the amount of money involved in these private parties when brands come in and rent the Sanger, that's not cheap.
No, it's not.
And so people were, I think, and look, in a lot of this, and I want to be very clear about this too, is that this is also not an investigative report on anything, and there's no accusations being laid here. It was just a relationship that people maybe perceived, at least from the outside, of being a little cozy between the for-profit and the non-profit side. And moving forward, that is something with you guys that you're sensitive to and how things move forward.
Certainly. And I think that the great thing about the Solomons is that they look at this as a charitable endeavor. They give away a ton of money a year to all sorts of things around the city. And I think they were a unique buyer here in that they said, you know, we want to turn this thing into a foundation. You know, not, I think every other buyer that looked at it was thinking about it from a for-profit angle. Mm-hmm. And they said, no, well, let's see what kind of good we can do with this. And I think they were really inspired by what Renee and Becker have done with the Hogs for the Cause. Okay. And yeah, having, you know, having a charitable organization that has its own momentum. Mm-hmm. And so I think that's how they view Tales of the Cocktail. I mean, I know that's how they view it. And, mm-hmm. and that's going to be one of the, you know, one of the big goals is how do we make an impact with the profits that are thrown off of Tales of the Cocktail, and how can we make that affect the people in my industry and then the people of New Orleans.
Right. And so, and that's the idea then, if I take you right here, Neil, is that treating this as a true education and a trade nonprofit organization and event.
Yes. Now, in Tales previously was an educational nonprofit. And it, you know, what you'll see is that this will turn into a more traditional nonprofit where 100% of the proceeds will be given away.
Okay, right. And that I think is a really important difference, and I appreciate the fact that you guys are cognizant of this, because as I said before, just the relationship occasionally raised some eyebrows when we start talking about the amounts of money that were involved. You know, we talked about the economic impact in the city, but you know, when you go rent, if you're a major brand and you go rent out a theater or you do a buyout of an art gallery for 5 days, that's still lots and lots and lots of money to be able to do that.
And I also think that there was a misconception that the Tunermans were lining their pockets, you know, terrifically right. through this. And I want to set the record straight on that.
They were audited, right? I mean, and yeah. they went through the
and
audit.
They were successful.
Right.
And they went through successfully with very few, you know, very few recommendations from the IRS. And I think that, you know, people have gotten very, very aggressive in the way that they've looked into them. But, you know, ultimately, I think that what people want, and the people from my industry and locals here, wanted to see a more traditional nonprofit.
And that makes a lot of sense. And let's be clear, I appreciate you saying this too. They were audited, and this stuff was going from the nonprofit side and contracting through a proper contracting process to the for-profit side. So, and any monies that a nonprofit spends is a matter really a public record anyway.
Exactly.
So we want to be very clear that we're not saying this, it's just the nature perhaps of the way the relationship was set up. You weren't necessarily seeing a lot of competitive outside bidders to some of the contracting process, or at least being perceived that way. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're bringing this up, is just simply to make it clear that we're not saying anything. You know, there was no graft going on. That's not what we're talking about.
Not at all.
It's just the nature of the way the structure was set up was something that was probably, especially as it got bigger and more money started coming in, the structure became problematic.
I just think that some people understood it and some people didn't. And I think that in that confusion that some people felt like they were misled.
Right. Now that makes a lot of sense. And I think that's a good way to put it. So as we move forward then with the idea of turning this into a foundation and a true educational nonprofit, well, let me ask you this question. Let's go here. Yeah. So let's just do that. So what are, you know, the idea is to focus, as you said, on things that are important to the industry and things that are important to the people of New Orleans. You want to give us some examples of kind of where you guys are thinking that is?
Well, sure. And I think that what in general, it's finding meaningful ways to affect change. As far as the industry goes, you know, there are a few pressing issues right now in my business, and you know, I'd like to believe it's a microcosm of what's happening in our country. But you know, we've got a diversity issue in the craft cocktail business, in the spirits business, and
in the hospitality industry in general, right?
Yeah, yeah. And I think that's going to have to get addressed. And I think that one of the great things about having a nonprofit is that we can start writing grants, mm-hmm. where we can say, okay, well, let's, instead of talking about this problem, what are we going to do? You know, let's spend some money on trying to find some real solutions here. Mm-hmm.
Go ahead. Can I ask you this question, Neil? Because I mean, sure. You kind of brought this up, and there's two things that I want to get into here, but let's just use this as an example, is that I think another concern that people had with Tales the way it was before was perhaps the organization was trying to be too many things to too many people, to try and do more than the in-house expertise was, and then the ability to bring in, say, outside experts or partner with other organizations mm-hmm. who had expertise in dealing with that. I think that was an area where maybe there was some mistakes made, or possibly just not thinking clearly about how to move forward as things got bigger. and issues continue to kind of flow into the organization and attempt to address them.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's I think that's the struggles of any business that's scaling. Mm-hmm. Right. I mean, I've seen it right. in my own business as well, I think the opportunity here is to get a fresh set of eyes mm-hmm. on the operation and see how we can make it better. And sometimes that kind of clear outside perspective can maybe find some stuff that people that have been working on it for 15 years don't see.
Yeah, new ways to go about it, right?
So I think it's an interesting opportunity.
Great. And I didn't want to take you off because of the diversity issue. And I will say this because this is also a matter of public record as well, is that part of the controversy that really kind of maybe got the ball rolling in a larger view of the public. I think that a lot of the issues with Tales of the Cocktail predated the incident that happened in Mardi Gras of last year in 2017. And I'm not going to apologize for Ann and Paul. They made some very poor choice of words and made some racist remarks. And there were, I think, accusations that were fair, that there was a tone deafness there, that Ann and Paul did not understand the racist remarks that they made, the impact. It wasn't a joke. It wasn't funny. And as we look at the diversity issue, as you were saying, Neil, about the lack of diversity the lack of diversity in the craft cocktail world, and even the split between front of house and back of house with diversity issues, that was just emblematic of being out of touch in the situation.
Yeah, I mean, look, it's definitely an issue in the craft cocktail world. It's gotta get addressed. And I mean, look, I look behind my bars and I see the same thing. I mean, we have work to do. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's going to take a lot of people putting their heads together, trying to figure out how we can move the needle for people that are underrepresented behind bars.
Let's hold that thought, Neil. Let me take a break here real quick and come back, and we'll come right back to us. I want to talk about that issue a little bit further and some of the other issues that are pertinent in the hospitality cocktail industry that Tales of the Cocktail really works to address, and where that's going to go. Friends, we're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
For a great place to enjoy great handcrafted and vintage cocktails, Victory is located at 339 Barone Street in the heart of downtown New Orleans. We have a variety of spirits, a talented team of bartenders, and great gourmet small plates. Our mission? To preserve an era when cocktails were made with artistry and pride. Grab your friends and come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. Give us a call to book your next private event or go to our website, victorynola.com. See you soon. Cheers.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Hey, New Orleans, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy. Want a great alternative to Over Oak Chardonnay? Try Yamhill Valley Vineyards Pinot Blanc, a wonderfully balanced white wine from the oldest family estate in McMinnville, Oregon, in the Willamette Valley. It's round and ripe like a Chardonnay, but without the heavy oak and sweetness of big commercial corporate Chardonnays. Yamhill Valley Vineyard Pinot Blanc. A great value under $20. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers.
Night before last, I got loaded on a bottle of whiskey. On a bottle of whiskey.
Tim McNally. Welcome to the Dine, Wine, and Spirit Show, NOLA Drinks Edition. Here's your host, Brian Diaz.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the program. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land wherever you may be. Yes, friends, thanks for tuning into the show today. As always, or tomorrow or Saturday or whenever you're listening to the podcast, however that math works, I appreciate you listening to the show. As you know, we are here at Cure, a great bar uptown here on Ferret Street, and we're chatting with the co-proprietor of Cure, Neil Bodenheimer. And what we're chatting about is Neil has a moved in with the Solomon. And let me ask you this, because we didn't really get to this. So it's you and the Solomon. Let's tell people who the Solomon family are, because we didn't really talk about this. So people listening outside of New Orleans may not know who the Solomon family is as you guys move forward with Tales of the Cocktail.
So they're a wonderful family down here. They're one of the most philanthropic families locally. They've done a lot of different things business-wise, and there are a lot of people locally that know them. But I'm not sure if everybody knows exactly what they do for charity, and it's I just think that this is a great example of what they're willing to do and the lengths that they're willing to go to make a positive impact on the city.
That's great. And they see, as you said, like yourself, a lot of the motivation was keeping Tales of the Cocktail in New Orleans and then using it as a vehicle, as it should be, to do good, right?
Yeah.
In the service industry, hospitality industry, yeah, and cocktail industry.
And that's one of the things that really allowed me to feel even better about getting involved, is that I saw an opportunity to really make a positive impact on the city, and to try and find some money and some donations that we can get back into the city and really see if we can make it a better place to live.
Great. Well, and I didn't want to get away, because we left off the last break, Neil, about talking about diversity. And one of the things you and I were talking about during the break briefly, and one of the things that I'm a big fan of is, I don't buy into the idea that you're not supposed to discuss religion and politics in bars. I think you have to have decorum.
Sure.
But the traditional,
that's hard to find these days.
That is hard to find these days. And something that you said, which is fantastic. Let me finish that thought. Is it simply, I think that being able to have these discussions and that sort of salon concept of what a bar is, and traditionally the history of this country and elsewhere, bars were places where people went as a social spot, but a spot to share ideas and share the news of the day and have these conversations.
They were very, very connected to a politics for a long time.
Absolutely. And I think that that's a great thing. And I think I do take umbrage when people say you shouldn't talk about these things in bars. But as you said, very well, that decorum is hard to come by these days. And another thing is that when we were talking about the diversity issue, which I'd like to get back into a little bit, is that we're also really good at avoiding these conversations in society at large, not just in bars.
Well, and they're not comfortable conversations.
They're tough conversations.
Yep. Hard conversations are not easy to do. But I think if we want to make the world a better place, then we have to start having them.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So we were talking, and I just sort of maybe to elaborate on this just slightly for listeners, is the lack of diversity in the cocktail world on balance. And I think what we see, my perception in New Orleans is that compared to a lot of other places, I think the diversity of gender diversity is not as bad in this town as it is in other places, meaning very male dominated. I'm not saying that it's not here, but it's less so here. Mm-hmm. But we see very few persons of color, and we also tend to see, I think, in the industry in general, less diversity with gender orientation and sexual orientation as well.
Yeah, I mean, I do think it's changing, and it's changing for the for the better. I think that the craft cocktail community is not a true representation of what the population looks like.
Sure,
And I think that we have to figure out a way to start having these conversations and figure out why it's not.
Right.
And I think that's it's going to be a big undertaking for Tales in 2018 and moving forward. But I also think that we have an opportunity, because we're going to have a grant system for people to address real problems.
And so the idea, just so people are clear, so the idea, Neil, is that people will be able to write a grant proposal and say, this is the problem we'd like to address, asking for this amount of money to run this particular program.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And there'll be an industry committee that will decide who gets grants.
And are you, as you guys move forward, since we're talking about the diversity issue, I'm assuming that you're going to be looking for people in advisory roles, board, whatever we're talking about, that are a little bit broader in representation than just a white dudes behind the bar.
Yeah, yeah, that's I would certainly hope so. We're we're very aware of it, and we're doing our best.
Great. And that's good. That's a really good thing. What are some of the other program priority areas besides diversity that we're talking about?
I mean, another big pressing issue not just in society, but it's really, really the hospitality industry really is representative of our society as a whole, because so many segments of our society work in the hospitality industry. Sexual assault is a big issue, and sexual harassment, figuring out a way to get people better educated on how to deal with it, when it's happening, when to step in. I really think that's something that we're going to have to address, as well. Addiction. I mean, this industry is a very, very slippery slope.
It's a tough lifestyle.
It is. It's very hard because some people are drawn to this industry because of its proximity to alcohol and to drugs and to parties,
like that late night lifestyle. Sure.
And it's, and there's a responsibility to make sure that if there are people that are beyond that line, that we can get them help. And also trying to find ways to get people to take care of themselves better. Mm-hmm. And, we're looking, we want to see healthier members of our community.
It's tough that the work-life balance, which is what we're talking about here, is very difficult in this industry, because obviously we know what fuels a lot of this industry is you're working when others are not.
That's right.
And that's the way the hospitality industry works in general. And so very often, your evening when you're getting off a shift is at 6 o'clock in the morning, and that's dinner time. And, mm-hmm. So trying to strike that balance of having other interests, exercise, healthy diet, proper sleep, it's tough.
Yeah, it is. I mean, sleep's is a huge issue, particularly for people that are working really late at night. I was a club bartender in New York for a long time, and I got out of my shifts at 6:30 in the morning, and you had to make a big effort to get back onto a regular schedule, just to be a normal citizen,
Right. You don't really want to go to the gym when you walk out of the bar at 6:30 after you close down, right?
And so, a lot of it is about discipline. But there's also financial literacy is a big part of making sure that we're caring for the industry, but also mental health.
Yeah, absolutely. And that's a really big deal. And I think maybe listeners out there, we've talked about some of these issues on the show in times past, but if you haven't heard any of those, or you don't really think about it, you might go, wow, what are these guys talking about? It is a very difficult lifestyle for all the reasons that we've just laid out. And people, you are, as you said, with the proximity to alcohol, addiction is very easy to come by.
It is.
In this industry.
It is. And there really is a responsibility. And it's not just for tales of the cocktail. It's as bars and restaurants become, it's become bigger business in the past 15 years. And you'll see that you see more corporate restaurants, and with that, that it's become, I hate to say real business, but it operates, the restaurant business operates closer to the way traditional businesses do now.
It has to, right? Yeah. I think a lot of people were kind of naive that way, and that if you are running, we've had some things obviously gone with the Best Restaurant Group here, where if you have 1,200 employees and no HR department, if you have 1,200 employees in any industry, you need an HR department.
Yeah, and so there is that, just trying to, if we're going to have professionals, and we expect people to be professionals at workforce, then we need to provide a professional environment.
That makes a lot of sense. Well, Neil, let's take a little break here and come back and talk to you a little bit more about future tales of the cocktail, some of these other issues that you all will be addressing. Talk a little bit about perhaps, because these things happen quickly. So Tales of the Cocktail itself in New Orleans isn't too far away, and Tales on Tour is even closer. So I don't want to, no fear, no deer in the headlights look right there. Oh, it's radio. We're going to take a little break here on the show, friends. Come on back.
I'm just looking for a woman that ain't got no man. My bucket's got a hole in it. Yeah, my bucket's got a hole in it. My bucket's got a hole in it. I can't find no beer.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bajot heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
Hey ladies, are you looking for wine to bring to your next girls' night out? Grab a bottle of Capitello Wines and enjoy the taste of fruit from Oregon's Willamette Valley. Capitello has a wide variety of wines to choose from. Sauvignon Blanc, Pinot Noir, dessert wine, and a Brut Sparkling that's a blend of Pinot Noir and Chardonnay. He'll even stop by next time he's in town. So grab the girls, have fun, and enjoy Capitello Wine. Cheers.
Looking to shake things up or find the bartender in you? We mean literally. At the New Orleans Drink Lab, you'll do just that. We teach you the history and tradition of classic New Orleans cocktails. Then you get behind the bar and make them. Master classes are fun, interactive, and hands-on. Great for small groups and team building. Come enjoy the ultimate cocktail experience. You mix, muddle, and master the art of cocktail making. Visit us at 343 Barone Street. Or go to our website. DrinkLabNola.com.
This time I'm walking to New Orleans.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with you. Thanks for tuning in. We're chatting with my friend Neil Bodenheimer, and I fall into that. I know that better, Neil. I should know that better. I keep calling you Bodenheimer, and it's Bodenheimer. And we were having this conversation during the break. I can relate. My last name's Diaz with an S, and my first name's Brian with the Y. And we were lamenting childhood there. Like I said, I never, when I would go to Disneyland when I was a kid, they never had Brian on the little license plate you put on the back of your bike with a Y.
Yeah, Neil with an A is pretty hard to find, too.
Yeah, it's, we had a rough upbringing, man, didn't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, it was real tough. So we're chatting here with Neil, and a hard knock life that we've both had, just kidding.
Yeah.
We're talking about Tales of the Cocktail a little bit, and kind of pulling back, for people who don't know, we've talked about the event a little bit, but it is a big to-do. It is a trade show and an education conference. It is now expanded in the number of days that takes place. So it's gone from, it was basically like a pub crawl, right? 15 years ago and a couple other things.
Yeah, it was a cocktail walking tour that Ann put together initially with Southern Comfort. And then after Katrina, it kind of scaled into something quite different.
Right. And it's how many people attended last year? It's a sizable number that comes, right?
I mean, I actually don't know. I think it's like 10,000 to 15,000.
I think it's right in that range. Yeah. Right.
Yeah, so, and I didn't get a chance to look at those numbers, but I know it's grown almost every year.
It is a big trade conference, and that's sort of what we're talking about here. And it's education and trade, but I think in many ways it is very similar. New Orleans has a very vibrant convention industry. Mm-hmm. We get the 35,000 cardiologists to come down here every year and things like that. And in this case, we're talking about 10,000 to 15,000 bartenders, folks in the spirits industry come down, and it's that scale.
And also enthusiasts. I mean, there are lots of
enthusiasts, right?
Yeah, and there are, and that's. And that's one of the challenges that I think Tales faces is how do you keep professionals engaged and how do you keep enthusiasts engaged?
Now, and a lot of that's going to relate to the workshops and the professional development stuff that's being presented, right?
Absolutely.
And how do you feel about that moving forward? Obviously, a lot of a lot of the workshops. It's always interesting to see what workshops sell out so quickly, and some of the ones that don't sell out. I always go, man, those are some of the best ones.
Yeah, I mean, it's I think that's kind of the great thing about great seminars, having a lineup of great seminars is it's a la carte, and what interests one person, invariably doesn't interest another.
Mm-hmm.
So I look at some of these things that sell out in a minute and I say, well, I could probably take or leave that, but there are a few that are last minute sellouts that I always really like to go check out.
Mm-hmm. That's
assuming that I actually have time to go over that.
I was just going to say, because that is one of the great ironies of Tales of the Cocktails. A lot of yourself and a lot of our friends here in the service industry, it's hard for them to be able to go because we're talking about this is when they're making money and everybody's working around the clock at the job.
Yeah, that's right. It's kind of the curse and the blessing of Tales is that it's done so much for our cocktail community down here, because having a yearly presence of, you know, one of the, well, you know, one of the leaders of the cocktail business has been amazing for our community. But on some level, we don't get to, you know, as hosts, we don't get to partake the way I think we'd all love to. I don't know if that's something that can be solved because we're hosting, and our job is to be, you know, our job is going to be great hosts.
Right.
And that means that you can't go see every seminar. That means you can't go to every party, which is fine.
Right. But, you know, and I appreciate that. And I think that some folks that I've seen, and I think you guys do this too, it's can't go to everything, but try and make accommodations so at least everybody can go to something.
Yeah. I mean, that's, you know, ultimately that's what you hope is that people feel like they can at least go spend a night, you know, if they're off one night. Mm-hmm. To go and do something fun.
And there, and we talked about the workshops and the seminars. There are, well, and there's also a lot of tasting rooms that go on during the days, and that's a major component of Tales of the Cocktail.
It is. And you know, I'll get back to the idea of trade show is that, you know, that there are a lot of spirits brands and
right.
and a lot of people that are looking to publicize what they do, and they want to make sure they get in front of different people, particularly people that are going to turn around and use it back in their bars and restaurants all over the world. So the tasting rooms are a big component. Education is something, I mean, look, education can always be better. And Tales Education has been really good for a lot of years. But I think we need to figure out improved access to education. And that's part of being a trade show is that you need to make sure that the people that need education are getting it. But you also need to make sure that it's the right kind of education.
That's important, I think. And, you know, and I see that with some of the tasting room presentations and some of the seminars that have gone on, that maybe there's a little bit of a miss there, especially in recent years as far as let me frame it this way. One of my favorite things in going to Tales over the past, I think this is going to be my seventh or so, something like that, coming up, assuming that you all allow me to go. All right.
But yeah, I'm sure. We will.
Okay. Right on. Thanks. is, you know, meeting some of these folks that are the small independent producers and some of these people who would not necessarily have the wherewithal outside of Tales of the Cocktail to show their brand to a captive audience, if you will. And I think, as far as my opinion on this goes, I those are my favorite rooms to go to because you're meeting the actual producer, and I hope that that continues as well.
I mean, look, I think it has to. I mean, it's the spirits and cocktail business is an ecosystem. It's fragile, and you can't just have big fish; you have to have small fish too. Mm-hmm. And I think that's it's a tough balance to walk because they're, you know, the big brands spend a lot of money and are really, really mean a great deal for our business. Mm-hmm. But, you know, some of these small brands are going to end up being absorbed by the larger companies one day. Mm-hmm. And, in some ways they're more nimble than the larger companies and can do stuff that they may not have the resources to do, or, you know, maybe just the bandwidth to do.
Right. Creating something interesting that the big brands wouldn't necessarily touch because they have maybe no motivation to.
And maybe they'll take a chance or two that the big brands aren't willing to do.
Right.
So, you know, you have to have both to have a healthy festival. And, you know, I know some small brands have felt a little disenfranchised in the past few years, and that's a hard balance to walk, but I think it's something that I'm very aware of moving forward.
Right. Excellent. I think that's a really important thing. That's a good thing to hear. Now, so in addition, we've talked about the tasting rooms. This all falls under the larger umbrella of education. Yes, it is fun to go taste. I like it. We're tasting alcohol. But there's a major social component to Tales of the Cocktail as well. So typically what we're talking about are the parties that happen in the evenings after the education stuff is done.
Yes, certainly. And those things are mostly big brand driven. You know, I would also say that, you know, it depends on who you ask. Some people say that they come to Tales for the education, and some people say they come for the networking, mm-hmm. for the community. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, they're both major parts of what Tales has to offer. And you know, when you can, you know, if you're a bartender in Middle America and you meet a really famous bartender from New York or LA or San Francisco or Chicago or even New Orleans, mm-hmm. it's meaningful. Mm-hmm. And you know, ideally, Tails is going to be connecting. It's connecting people.
That's a really great point, Neil, because a lot of people that I have enjoyed meeting at Tails, and I remember just even this past year was just after registering as a media person, and then I was in the what used to be the registration room, and it was now kind of just like a shop, and there's a display area and some exhibits and stuff going on, and I met these three guys that were from, if I remember correctly, from Des Moines. And they had just opened their own bar, and were young guys in their 20s, and were just so their first Tails, and were so excited to partake in the education and network, as you said, and to see that enthusiasm was a really wonderful thing. And I think the event bounds with that, actually.
Yeah, I mean, and that's what you've seen with Tails is an industry that some of the struggles over the past year. It's also an industry that's. It's having its own issues. I mean, you've seen such growth in the craft cocktail sector that we're having an identity crisis because we went from a really small industry to all suddenly a pretty large industry.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, some of these are growing pains.
Right. That makes sense. Well, Neil, let's do this. Let's take a quick little break here. We're going to come back. We're going to do one more segment with Neil. I appreciate him taking some time to do this. And then we're going to close the chapter here, close the book on Tails. And we're going to come back and talk a little bit about where you can, you know, maybe find Neil at the bar and hang out and have some drinks. All right. We're going to take a little break here on the show. Come on back.
Hi, this is Kevin Richards with Sazerac Rye Whiskey. In 2008, the Louisiana legislature made the Sazerac cocktail the official cocktail of New Orleans, affirming what New Orleanians had known for over 150 years. You just can't beat a good Sazerac. The Sazerac cocktail is the quintessential New Orleans drink, perfect for celebrating the arrival of fall festivals, football season, or just being proud to be a New Orleanian. For the official recipe, visit www.sazerac.com.
Hi, this is Jeff Craner with the award-winning Nottingham Cellars, located in Livermore Valley, California's oldest wine-growing region, producers of fine wines. Try our clean, crisp 1846 Chardonnay, an ideal pairing with New Orleans seafood, or our bold, rich Petite Sirah, excellent with steak, to our flagship Bordeaux-style blend, Supremacy. You can find our wines in finer restaurants throughout New Orleans. Hope you enjoy our wines.
Hi, Jack Jelenko here, local wine guy, suggesting that great handcrafted Pinot Noir from Oregon doesn't need to be expensive. Consider Yamhill Valley Vineyard Estate Pinot Noir, from the oldest family estate in the Willamette Valley of Oregon. It's rich, ripe, wonderfully balanced, and it's only about $20 at your favorite New Orleans wine shop. Yamhill Valley Vineyard. Top quality doesn't need to be expensive if you know what to drink. Ask for it wherever you buy wine. Cheers!
The French Market is open daily with pop-up fresh markets on Wednesdays and Saturdays. The Crescent City Farmers Market is at the French Market each Wednesday, rain or shine, from 2 to 6 p.m., on Saturdays from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m., find new and different vendors offering everything from fresh bagels to fresh herbs. Vendors change weekly depending on weather and seasons, so check them out often. Visit frenchmarket.org for a list of farmers market vendors, chef demonstrations, live music, and special events.
Are you looking for the best buns? Well, we have them at Bayou Burger in the Quarter. Wait till you bite into one of our acclaimed burgers like the Cowboy Burger, Tiebreaker Shrimp Burger, the world-famous Gator Burger, or you can build your own with endless combinations. It's all fresh meat, never ever frozen. Everywhere you look, there's big screen TVs where you'll never miss a minute of the action. Boasting the largest balcony dining in the French Quarter, you can watch all the action pass you by on the street. Find the best burgers in action at Bayou Burger. 501 Bourbon at St. Louis for the best buns on bourbon. It's Bayou Burger, baby.
Did you know that there's a vineyard and winery making quality table wines just 1 hour north of New Orleans? At Pontchartrain Vineyards, we produce award-winning wines from our 15-acre vineyard, as well as premium wine grapes sourced from the West Coast. Try our light, crisp, Louisiana-grown Blanc du Bois, or have a glass of Chardonnay, Zinfandel, or our Cab Syrah blend made right here in Louisiana. There's something for everyone at Pontchartrain Vineyards. For more information, go to PontchartrainVineyards.com.
Savory crab meat cheesecake and decadent white chocolate bread pudding are Palace Cafe originals. For nearly 26 years, Palace Cafe has been serving award-winning cuisine in the historic Warline Music Building. Located on Canal Street at the edge of the French Quarter, Palace Cafe is open 7 days a week for breakfast, lunch, and dinner, and open for jazz brunch on the weekends. Make sure to try one of their refined classic cocktails or a glass of wine from their nationally recognized wine list. Palace Cafe is located at 605 Canal Street.
The green room is smoking.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Thanks for tuning in today, and thanks, Neil, for being here, man. I really appreciate it. It was a great conversation. I know there's some trickiness in all this because it's still all happening, and
it's a pending transaction. So so there's some things that we can talk about and some things that we can't. You know, certainly wanted to be as open as we can. I know a lot of people have questions about it, but at the same time, you know, we're still getting our plan together, and we're really excited to see what the future holds for it.
That's great. Thank you. I appreciate that. And we agreed during the break here that we'll revisit this as things continue to develop and maybe delve a little further into particular topics and things like that as things move forward. Because this, as we were talking about also during the break, really kind of focused on the Tales of the Cocktail portion that takes place in New Orleans in July. So this year, July 17th through the 22nd. Yep. But Tales does stuff year-round. So it's coming fast and furious already.
It does. I mean, we've got Tales on tour coming in the beginning of April in Edinburgh, Scotland.
And that's where, just so people know, it's kind of similar, right? But it goes to a particular city for 2 years in a row, right? And then it moves around.
So it's a small festival, and it's a way to bring kind of the best pieces of Tales on the road. And so it goes to international cities, and it does it 2 years in a row, which, as if you're in operations, 2 years is great because you get 1 year to learn all your hard lessons and then 1 year to benefit from that.
Right.
So this is the second year in Scotland, and then we're going to have to go and figure out where the next Tales on Tour will be after this year.
You guys kind of looking to keep that structure, you think, at this point? It sounds like 2 years. Okay.
Yeah, I think so. But you know, once again, that's opinion, not fact.
Right. Fair enough. So there's also daiquiri season, which goes on the month of September.
Yep.
And that's a lot of tell people what that is.
So daiquiri season was when Tales acquired Daiquiri Festival from Jeremy Thompson. And it was a way to focus on daiquiris. Both really, Jeremy's initial concept was about frozen daiquiris and how important they are to our overall society here, which I totally agree with. Uh-huh. and it became the daiquiri as a category, whether it's traditional classic daiquiri or frozen daiquiri, and it's focuses on variations and on classics, and so it's a way for people all around the country now to think about the daiquiri and
in all its versions
and all its glory too.
Yes, in all its glory. And I think it's fun because we see, just using New Orleans as an example, where we sort of have, you know, we have these bars that we'll maybe call craft cocktail bars, and then we have, you know, a multitude of frozen daiquiri shops. And this is a good time where those two don't necessarily play in the sandbox together all the time, and this is a good opportunity for that to happen.
It is, and it's it gets people thinking about the certainly from our end, you know, what are the challenges of frozen drinks, and maybe get some other people that are used to doing frozen drinks. You know, what are the challenges of a la minute drinks?
Right. So, and we have Aperitif Week, which goes on in November, right?
Yep. And so that was a new offering that they had this past year, focusing on aperitifs, and it was a way to get people thinking about low proof cocktails.
That was actually
near and dear to my heart.
Yeah, right. And that is a growing trend in the industry, right? It's talking about lower ABV, lower alcohol cocktails. And I hear more and more conversation about it. I see more and more emphasis in bar programs on those types of drinks.
Well, I mean, look, it's we experienced that firsthand in the early days of Cure. I mean, when you know, the first question we got is, why are drinks so small? And it's because they were really strong. and then the second question was, how are you going to clean up all the mess? Because they're strong and you can only have so many of them. And certainly responsibly, you can only have a few.
10 Sazeracs is not a good idea.
No, 10 Sazeracs is a recipe for disaster for everyone around you and you.
Exactly.
You know, ultimately, if you're looking, you know, in the beer world, there's session beers. I think when you start talking about lower proof cocktails, you can think about them as session cocktails, things where you can sit down and you don't have to get up after two drinks and go.
Right. especially here again in New Orleans, warm summer day outside, yeah. Parade route type drinks, these sorts of things. I mean, that, you know, if you're going to kind of go for a longer day, tailgating, you know, and anything like that.
And look, no one wants to get blotto after two drinks.
Right.
So we're, you know, we focused on that when we had Belloc at the Hotel Modern. Mm-hmm. And that was a big, you know, it's a traditional class of drinks. And we've always had a deep love for them.
Cobbler and
so cobblers and we also did juleps back then, but it was not that, you know, those were not low proof.
Right, those are
that's for the high proof crowd.
Right, got to have it.
but aperitif wine in particular is a passion of mine, and it's something that I think you see more and more people catching on to. It's a great way to drink. It's more stable than a traditional wine, in that you can open it and keep it open for a week.
Right.
You know, sometimes 2 weeks, mm-hmm. you know, for some things, if it's cared for, you can keep it open for a month.
Mm-hmm.
It's an attractive way to drink sometimes.
I think that's very, very, sometimes very refreshing drinks, these sorts of things. Absolutely. Well, Neil, we got to about 3 or so minutes left. Let's tell people about Cure and Cane and Table, which are the two properties that you guys have.
So Cure is about to turn 9.
Wow! Congratulations.
Thanks, and that'll be at the beginning of February. So we're excited to be in our 9th year, and we've been around for the kind of rebirth of Ferrette Street, which has been really fun for us. And we focus on classic cocktails, and then on modern, you know, on classic cocktails with a modern twist. For our originals, we change the menu about 8 times a year, and focus on really great selection of whiskey and aperitif wines too, just like we talked about.
Yeah,
and,
absolutely.
And just we like to have a pretty good selection within a lot of different categories.
Mm-hmm.
So our goal is for you to. If you can't find something you want to drink here, you're doing something wrong.
I think that there. I always like it. I said at the beginning here to look at all the wonderful bottle collection here. There is something for everybody here.
That's what I'd like to believe. But you know, at the same time, it's we've always wanted to give people a first experience with something, and you know what that means is sometimes we may not have a brand that you're exactly comfortable with, but we hope that we can turn you on to something that is just as good.
Yeah.
And
something
maybe,
in the family,
where we can turn the light on for people about different products that we have.
What about Cane and Table?
So Cane and Table is our Caribbean inspired restaurant down in the French Quarter, and it's basically all the it's inspired by the time period that led up to the beginning of the tiki movement, and so that's everything from colonial drinking,
mm-hmm.
All the way up until pretty modern drinking. And the great thing is that the cuisine mimics the cocktails and the journey of the cocktails. So it can be everything from colonial Southern food, to Cuban stuff, to sometimes some Mexican stuff, to, you know, it travels with the rum trade. And so it's a really fun adventure because you can drink great cocktails and you can have food that really matches that.
It's
and
a cool then, space too.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we couldn't have gotten any luckier. When I grew up, it was Genie Courtyard Grill.
Oh, and, yeah, okay.
And
yeah,
so right. it was a space. I think I had my first glass of wine there when I was a kid. So it was.
I didn't know that part of the story.
It's got a little sentimental. It's got a lot of sentimental value for me. But you know, we wanted to create what a traditional port bar would look like in any number of stops in the Caribbean.
Mm-hmm.
And we felt like we had a space that actually was that.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And, yeah. You know, we like to believe that New Orleans is the northernmost point in the Caribbean.
Absolutely.
So we act like it.
That's great. Well, Neil, real quickly, tell people where they can find both Cure and Cane and Table, street address and online.
So Cure is curenola.com, and we're at 4905 Ferrette Street at the corner of Upper Line. And then Cane and Table is caneandtablenola.com. And you can find us at on Decatur.
Yep, 1100 block of Decatur.
Yeah,
right?
1100 blocks. So yep. That's between Governor Nichols and Ursulines. And we're right in between Trinity and
Coops.
In Coops. In Coops, yeah.
There you go.
You can find us right behind the Coops line.
Exactly. Neil, thanks so much for taking time out today, and I appreciate you talking about all this, man. Friends, that was Neil Bodenheimer from Cure, and also moving forward with Tales of the Cocktail. So, friends, we'll stay on that story. We'll have Neil back on and some others connected to that down the road. We're going to take a little break here on the show. We're going to be back to close some things out. So, friends, come on back. Wow, where's your Shoney Nation? Wow, wow, creation, we don't bow down on nobody's ground. But how we love to hear them call us Indian Ring, the Golden Eagle, Wild Magnolia, the little red, white, and blue, the pretty monogram hunters, and we don't bow down on nobody's ground. But how we love to hear them call us.
Looking for a bottle of wine to impress your friends and family? Miro Cellars from California's Russian River Valley is the perfect wine for any occasion. Miro Cellars searches the region for the finest grapes to make their one-of-a-kind specialty wines. Award-winning winemaker Miro Chelikov considers the particular geology and seasonal climate of each vineyard when selecting the most interesting grapes the region has to offer. Because Miro has complete freedom to make precisely the wines he loves best, the results are spectacular. Let yourself in on one of the best-kept secrets in wine today, Miro Cellars.
Hi, New Orleans. It's Laura from Sobu, and I'm here with Chef Juan Carlos.
Sobu's got happier hour. It's 3 to 6 from 3 to 6.
It's bar bar sips and snacks, all for $3 to $6 from 3 to 6 p.m. every day.
Laura's got something to please everyone at the bar for happier hour, all for 3 to 6 here at Sobu.
And we know you'll want to try a smoky pulled pork taco or any of the other delicious snacks on our happier hour menu.
Sobu's happier hour, every day from 3 to 6, 310 Charter Street in the quarter.
Complimentary parking next door at the W Hotel.
Hi, I'm Dickie Brennan, and I'd like to invite you to our new Black Duck Bar located on the second floor of Palace Cafe. Named after the Prohibition's infamous rum runner, the Black Duck features over 120 rums as well as an extensive tequila collection. In addition, acclaimed master French chef Rene Bajot heads up the small plates and charcuterie kitchen. Join us for happy hour Monday through Friday from 4 to 7 p.m. with half-price small plates, local draft beer, and tap wine.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the show. Brian Diaz here with the WGSO 990 AM in New Orleans and in podcast land, wherever you may be. Yes, friends, as always, as I like to say, thanks for tuning into the show. Friends, I hope you found that interview with Neil interesting. Neil was as forthcoming, I think, as he possibly could have been. A lot of what we talked about, as I talked about in the second segment here of the show leading up to the interview, is to put it in some sort of context and tell you the purpose of the interview, how the emphasis really was on, you know, what is the future of Tales of the Cocktail and the importance of the event and things that are on the radar of Neil and the Solomon family as they take this important event over. And again, it's not, the purpose of this interview was not to demonize Ann and Paul Tunnerman, nor exonerate Ann and Paul Tunnerman and the mistakes that they made and just things with Tales of the Cocktail that I think are problematic. I didn't want to put words in Neil's mouth. You know, what I said, certain things matter of public record, certain things he couldn't say because of a non-disclosure agreement. As I said, also leading up to the interview, Neil will be coming back on the show to talk about things as they develop. You know, and you know, again, we will continue to ask some of these questions. You heard us talk about issues, lack of diversity, problems with sexual assault and harassment in the hospitality industry, in the cocktail industry, and several other issues. Lifestyle balance was one that we highlighted, of course. So we're going to continue to ask those questions, and we're going to continue to ask the questions of Tales of the Cocktail and the broader industry as well. It's not all on Tales of the Cocktail or Neil or the Solomon family, nor was it really on Ann and Paul Tunnerman, regardless of what they did well or didn't do well and mistakes that they made.
it's not on Tales of the Cocktail to solve all of these things. Perhaps in many instances, Tales of the Cocktail, and I still kind of think this should focus on being an education and trade show, you know, a true professional conference. And if you're going to address some of these issues, which I think it's a great forum to do so, but you need to bring in experts and empower folks with good representation, with diverse representation, listen to the voices, bring in others to help address these things. Don't try and be too much to too many people, which is one of the failings, I think, of Tales of the Cocktail in the past. Now, I may be sounding very critical of the event. I think that's, that is the case. I am critical of the event in a lot of ways. But in a lot of ways, it's also a really, really good and really, really important event. I've met a lot of really cool people. We talked about this. People trying, you know, independent spirits producers that are bootstrapping, trying to launch a product and get it into the market. And they choose to come to New Orleans, which is great, and debut their product. And also, you know, try and find distributors and all the business development that comes with it and the brand building and the networking. Some of the most exciting, innovative people in the industry that I have met at Tales of the Cocktail. I love the enthusiasm. I love when people come to New Orleans and experience our brand of hospitality. Maybe take something home when they go back to their establishments about how we do things and how we do things right here. The money that it puts into the economy, as we talked about, cannot be overstated during what is our low season. Again, I don't want to give short shrift to the problem, and I know that this is a topic that I think we'll need to address on the show here about, you can say it puts all the money into the pocket of, say, bartenders and restaurant owners and so on and so forth, or much of the money goes into their pockets during a time that is greatly needed, but to folks in the back of house, which are often folks, people of color and things, where they're not seeing the economic benefit any time of the year of the hospitality industry in New Orleans and don't really see it from Tales the Cocktail. I'm not here to provide answers to say, you know, should it go away because of its problematic nature in the past. I think this is all just a really good thing. If the Tunnermans were still running Tales of the Cocktail, my tune might be a bit different. The fact that somebody else is taking it over and that the stuff is on their radar, I think is really important. The fact that they're going to move forward, at least that's their plan, to move forward as a true educational nonprofit foundation, do grants, let people from these communities apply to put together programs under their own volition to address these problems. Really good stuff. So I think, you know, we can't hold, as I said earlier, Neil and the Solomon family accountable for the sins of the father, if you will. We need to give them their shot to make Tales of the Cocktail better, make it hopefully what it can be, and make it be a real, true, positive force in the cocktail industry, in the spirits industry, and here in New Orleans. I think it's really important that it stays here, and I'm glad that they're taking on the challenge. Overall, it's a really good thing. So I do, again, want to thank Neil for coming on. I know it was a difficult interview. We were kind of joking between one of the breaks that it's been some of the hardest interviews and conversations he's had lately, but they want to get the word out there of what's going on, because Tales of the Cocktails in July, but Tales on Tour is coming up here in the spring in Edinburgh, as we talk about, and all kinds of other things they have going on. So he chose to get the word out now, even though the transaction's not closed. So I really want to thank him for that. And stay tuned, friends. We'll ask those questions and we'll keep on top of this here on the show. I wanted to mention, friends, a new book coming out here. It's called Louisiana Tables, a Culinary Heritage Tour. It's by Jill Benson, and Jill is the Director of Culinary Programming there at SOFAB, the Southern Food and Beverage Museum, a great institution. If you haven't had a chance to visit it, go check it out. If you come to visit us in New Orleans, if you're listening to the podcast, go check it out. Again, Southern Food and Beverage Museum. It's cool. The book is only actually, it's kind of meant to be a pocketbook, so there's not pictures or graphics or anything. It's only 5.5 inches by 4.25 inches. But what she does is she kind of goes and she divides the state of Louisiana up into, I think 6 or so regions. That's right. And she kind of looks at their signature dish or dishes and gives the recipes to those. But woven throughout that is sort of a culinary and cultural history of food. And all of it, you know, really references apparently a lot of the different influences, Native American influences, all the international influences, Creole, everything you can possibly imagine through these different recipes. And it sounds like a really cool book. I think you can get it on Amazon. You can also get it. Where else can you get it? You can get it at the Tabasco Country Store and Rue Royale. You can certainly get it at SOFAB at the Southern Food and Beverage Museum. Audubon Aquarium Gift Shop has it. I don't think it's particularly expensive because it is kind of a pocketbook thing, but check that out, friends. Sounds like, I love cookbooks. Sounds like a cool cookbook. Again, Louisiana's Tables, a Culinary Heritage Tour by our own New Orleans, Jill Benson. So do check that out. Friends, we got some good shows coming up for you here today. Of course, as we talked about, we're in the middle of Carnival. Yes, we are. Here we go. Love it, love it, love it. And yeah, so we're going to be doing some stuff like that. I think we'll have our good friends Chris Hanna and Paul Gustings and probably some other bartenders around town talking about Mardi Gras drinks. We'll get into some of the history of Mardi Gras cocktails. And then we get into stuff. One of the things I like to talk about is, hey, when you're going to go out to a parade or you're going to go celebrate, what are some good things that you can maybe batch up and take with you? All right, maybe don't want to bring 10 bottles out to the parade route. What can you batch up in a jug, but still have something good that doesn't suck? So we'll probably talk a little bit about that. We're also going to be talking about, next week's show, we do about once a quarter. We're going to talk about beer. And our good friend Sal Mortellaro, who is a certified, actually the top ranking or highest level certification beer judge in Louisiana, is going to be joining us. And Matt Horney, who is also a beer judge in his own right, but the brewmaster at Old Rail Brewing Company in Mandeville, where we're going to tape. We're going to talk about winter brews, and we'll probably get into some carnival brews too with those guys. That'll be a lot of fun. We're also going to talk about Top Taco. We'll interview Shane Finkelstein in the near future, who is the organizer of the event. Wildly successful event that went on last year. This year it's going to be March 15th at Waldenburg Park. That's going to be a lot of fun. I had a great privilege of being a judge on the cocktail side. So there were the taco competition and the cocktail competition. And one of the things that Shane is looking to do, we'll have some news on that. He was telling me some stuff yesterday that they're actually looking to expand into. So we'll have Top Taco on March 15th, as I said, at Waldenburg Park. But they're also looking to do an agave week. So feature a little bit more about tequila, mezcal, have some panel discussions and things like that. So that should be a lot of fun. Shane's, kind of nailing a lot of this down now. So we'll talk to him about that on a show in the near future. We're also going to be talking again to Tracy Napolitano, my friend, who is also a second annual festival. Go figure, another one. The New Orleans Bourbon Festival, which is going to be coming up Thursday, March 8th through Sunday, March 11th. And they're moving to a new location. It was at the Sugar Mill. It's going to be at the Contemporary Arts Center in New Orleans and the Le Meridian Hotel, which is at 900 Camp Street. And that's going to be really a lot of fun there. That was a really cool event. They did a great job with it last year. Very, very successful. I love the presentation and the grand tastings they did. They did seminars, which are fantastic. So we're also going to be talking to Tracy about that stuff and lots of other cool stuff coming up. So that's just, a couple, two, three future shows to look for and in the near future here, friends. So I really appreciate you listening to this show, and I would really appreciate you listening to those shows. So friends, again, happy carnival to everybody. Thanks again for listening to the NOLA Drinks Show here today. Really appreciate it. And as always, friends, as I like to say, be kind to one another, use your turn signal, happy carnival. And until then, cheers, y'all.